Welcome to the Umbrella Hour. This is Dr. On, clinical sexologist, and Xander Keg, licensed social worker. Xander will introduce our guest this hour.
Thank you, On. Yes, I have the privilege of introducing a guest that is known to both of us personally. Usually it's somebody that I know, but this is a guest that we both know. So let's just jump right into it. Today we have Fresh Lev White. Lev is a love and compassion activist. He offers mindfulness, mediation, and diversity trainings as tools for shifting towards more authentic, conscious, and passionate living. He teaches and writes about how unconditional love and self-compassion are the ultimate gateways to honoring and understanding others, thus healing our communities and our planet. To learn more about Lev and their work, you can go to LinkedIn and look for Fresh Lev White. Lev is in quotation marks, and he has a website at affirmativeacts.org. Welcome to the show, Lev.
Thank you. Thank you. It's so wonderful to see both of you and together.
I know.
So cool. So cool. Yes. Thanks for having me. Just for reference, my pronouns are he, they, and love, all of which I live to embody.
I love a pronoun of love. That's a lot of fun.
It's a practice. So imagine in my whole day, I'm trying to get the loving angle. It's work.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a lot of people would say, why? Why would you do that? Another people might say, there is no love, or at least no love for people who are, quote, against us. So in some ways, going towards love and wanting to spread love is a bit countercultural in some circles.
Yeah, it's a radical act of compassion for myself, knowing that underneath it all, I feel I am love, and love is how I would respond to anyone being harmed, even if I don't like them.
Yes. Yes, of course. I'm the same way. I mean, it's about being pro-human. It's about not dehumanizing people, regardless of whether they hold beliefs that I find abhorrent or not.
It's one of my practices to say that I live on the Huchin territory, which is the land of the Lishana Lone people in an area known as Oakland, California.
Oakland, California.
It's part of my practice to offer that. Something we do out here. We have beautiful folks who are indigenous here. And so we get to interact with them. I pay a yearly tax, which is $17, then offer other ways that I can offer to contribute throughout the year.
That's beautiful. You talk about mindfulness, and I know that for some people, mindfulness is a state of being, or it's a practice, or it could be those both of those things and more. What do you mean by mindfulness, and for how long has this been something that you've been focusing on in your life and your work?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I use mindfulness as a familiar term for the larger population. And I know that in and from many Dharma, which is Buddhist practice communities, mindfulness and meditation can be seen as differently, only because mindfulness can be taught without the ethics that are included in meditation. While I call what I do stealth mindfulness, nobody knows that I'm bringing in Buddhist concepts and practices when I'm teaching. And those will simply include love and compassion for ourselves and love and compassion for those around us, in addition to the technical mindfulness term, which has been about focus and productivity in the mainstream. Not that we're not practicing mindfulness, but in the mainstream, that's how it's been brought about. I probably discovered meditation in the early 80s when it was a thing. I remember seeing the white woman on the cover of a magazine with a candle. And then I learned the Mahayana chant. I believe it comes out of the Tibetan tradition. I chanted it for a while. And I remember having this feeling that I was not alone chanting this because I saw images of monks. So I had that. And then reading Thich Nhat Hanh, one of the first books I read, one of the things that left the impression on me was when you're washing the dishes, that you're there washing the dishes, learning at that time mindfulness in this way of understanding what's going on in my body mechanically, and then understanding the weight of the dish and the water and just really being present. And then I walked away from that and looked at other spiritualities, including shamanism and Taoism, before coming into Buddhist space. Even though I had done some meditation along the way, it wasn't until about, I would say, 2012, 2013, when I was really serious and in a daily practice, listening to Dharma talks, which are Buddhist teachings.
I've told the story, but I don't know if I've ever told it on this show, that when I was 12 years old, I was born in 1966. So this was in the 70s. My father took me to a transcendental meditation ashram for my birthday to get my mantra. That was my birthday present. As a child in TM, it's a walking meditation. The Tibetan or the Thich Nhat Hanh engaged Buddhism. Instead of sitting quietly and stilly, they recognized children have all this extra energy. So we would do walking meditation. And so if you could imagine when I'm 12, so that means I'm in sixth grade. At recess time, I would be walking around the grassy area doing my meditation.
Nice.
So I grew up in an environment where Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance was given to me at around
I
14
remember
or
that.
15. Also, books, the meditation for the teenager. I was definitely raised within this practice. I believe I have read somewhere else that you've been with Spirit Rock.
I've been their practitioner many times, and I
Okay.
went through first the East Bay Meditation Center, which had a dedicated practitioner program. They had a deepening program into Buddhism before I went to the Community Dharma Leadership, dedicated practitioner through Spirit Rock, graduated those programs. I also went through coaching school, and at that time, that school also brought in practices from, it wasn't named that way. A lot of it was about mindfulness, being present, being aware of what was going on for you inside so that you can be more aware of what was going on for your clients.
That's very cool. My introduction to Spirit Rock was in the mid-1990s. My father gave me a book. I was on my way to college, and he gave me this book called A Path with Heart by Jack Kornfield. So it took probably almost 10 years later that I was able to do a 7-day silent metta retreat or loving kindness retreat at Spirit Rock. And then I did a 3-day silent retreat with the Against the Stream guys, the Dharma punks. The all tattooed punk rock Buddhists.
That's right. Exactly. I'm sure I've done close to 100 retreats by now, ranging from 3 days to 30 days. One day I would like to do a 3 month. May that budget come in this year.
People who are near retirement age, I want to mention that I just learned about something. In California, the San Francisco Zen Center has teamed up with a Quaker senior housing organization called Kendall. They've already built one. They're building a second, what they call continuing to care retirement community or life plan community. They've got one in Healdsburg, which is up in Sonoma County, I believe. And then they're building one in Simi Valley, which is Ventura County. It's like a Quaker foundation, but with this Zen community engagement, meditation, mindfulness. It sounds like a wonderful place to retire to.
My mother, when she would paint or draw or do whatever, the understanding was that we were to be quiet unless she was working with us and teaching us about drawing or painting. I would get quiet within because what I would experience would be the sound of her pencil hitting the paper, and it was soothing to me. As I grew older, she would take us on walks and remind us to smell the air, look at the trees, be aware, in other words. And I grew up in Amsterdam. There was a lot of traffic, a lot of trams and buses and cars and people and bicycles, lots of bicycles. And one day we were coming back from lunch. I'd gone to my friend's house, going back to school, and I saw a little mouse. And I worried that the little mouse was going to get hit by a car or struck by something. So I managed to get the little mouse and I put it in my briefcase. I think I was in third grade at the time or fourth grade. We returned to school. We're in class. And all of a sudden, the kids start screaming, standing on their desks. I was wondering, why is everybody standing on their desks and screaming? The teacher at the time said, "Whose mouse is that?" And for some reason, he knew one of us brought that mouse in. So, of course, I put my hand up. I had to retrieve the mouse. And then he told me I had to put the mouse outside. So that was the end of the mouse deal. Even with all the noise and the distraction and all the stuff that went on, I was able to focus on that mouse. As I got older, I ended up taking dance and theater. My choreographer was very determined that we would always do meditation. And I'm so grateful for that because in dance, you work hard. It's a real workout. It's hours of working out and concentration. Then it's pulling back and taking care of yourself, but not just your body, where your mind is and how you feel on the inside. It became practice. And then I was drawn into that world, just like both of you. Couldn't get away from it.
I love the story about the mouse. Something you just said about taking care of the mind. And when I think of the work of self-compassion, which you talked about just briefly, Lev, I think of that as a form of taking care of the mind. I'd love for you to talk more about self-compassion and how it can be practiced or how it can be utilized, and what are some of the benefits of self-compassion.
Yeah, thank you. I also enjoyed the story of the mouse. Thanks. Yes, mind, body, and spirit. So self-compassion, mindfulness can help us be aware of what's going on that we usually can ignore. Anybody at work right now knows what that's like. So first, we're aware of what's going on for us, and then being able to bring love to ourselves, to our hearts, bring kindness, and being able to say, I have a beautiful friend named Vicky. So let's say something happens or she's challenged with her own mental thoughts, right? So that's one of the places where we need help is the way we can talk to ourselves, not very kindly. And she has this practice where she puts her hands up over her heart and she says, "It's okay, darling. It's okay, dear." And holding ourselves like we would hold a child who's in pain, who's in suffering. Self-compassion might be that. It might be in the practices, but it might be not eating another extra ice cream. It could be something that I like to encourage people to pause before you watch the news. Notice what's happening in your body, because often we bypass a trauma response to listen to the news. So being kind to yourself can be an act of self-compassion. And so my practices are phrases, I'm okay, or we're okay, which I just had to exercise with a client who was just having a really hard time and was screaming. And so me not wanting to interrupt and feeling safe was able to just put my hand on my heart, and we're okay. This is okay. And I believe it's something that can be practiced every day and throughout the day, depending on what's going on. So it may show up in the mind, but like An was talking about, first you dance and it's really hardcore. And An was talking about the mind too. So, yes, the body needs to stretch and ease and get into a place of relaxation, but the mind is also working that whole time. And how do we bring compassion and kindness to the mind because we tripped or we fell or we didn't pose right or we think we didn't get something right or envy comes up. Like, how do we take care of all of that?
When I think of the application of the I'm okay, we're okay, self-care and self-compassion, what you described was you were working with a person one-on-one who was exhibiting a high level of emotionality, and you took the responsibility of your own reaction to that by saying, it's okay, I'm going to be okay, I'm safe. When I think of benefits of meditation, the benefits of mindfulness, the benefits of self-compassion, these exercises, it helps us develop higher and higher levels to the stress. There's not much I can control in the outside world. I have the ability to calm my internal world. That can only happen if I'm attuned to what is happening in my internal world. And I think that's the gift of mindfulness or meditation, is that you're given the opportunity to focus in on yourself, but not in like this exclusion to others way. You go in and you learn some tools and strategies, and then you can extend back out. And each time you go inward, when you extend back out, there's a bit more that you can withstand.
You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. An and Zander Kagg. We will take our first commercial break. Our guest this hour is Lev White, who is a love and compassion activist. He offers mindfulness, mediation, and diversity training as tools for shifting toward more authentic, conscious, and passionate living. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet mixed with water and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home, or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colors or preservatives. Just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world. And hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. Our guest this hour is Lev White, who is a love and compassion activist. Let's pick up where we left off.
That doesn't mean that you don't still work towards change. You don't advocate for things to be different, but just knowing that it won't come in a moment, right? When we're feeling that distress in the moment, we can utilize those skills to go inward and say, I'm okay. In clinical terms, people might refer to this as grounding, right? There's grounding techniques that we can do.
Right.
This is like a non-clinical way, although I do know that meditation and mindfulness has been brought into clinical practice.
Yes.
But it's not necessarily clinical in that sense.
Thank you for all of that. I agree. And I want to add that you don't have to do it alone. One of the ways that we can deepen our practice is in community with others. In Buddhism, we call it Sangha. In some places, it might be your congregation. But being able to be in community, the apps are great, but it's a whole different experience to be with others and in the room who are also working to heal, who are also working to wake up. There was something else I wanted to say, but I just turned 61, so I get a slide. Maybe it'll come back.
Oh,
I can relate.
Xander, you just started bringing in, it's not about being selfish. And it reminds me of when I was teaching at the East Bay Meditation Center, which has a lot of activists coming in and out, people who are social justice committed. And one person just say, how can I focus on me when those people, I need to help them? And for me, as you heard in my bio, I have a deep understanding that the world heals through us, that our healing impacts the world and people around us. When we're acting out of a codependent place, we're limited. It's not that you can't be compassionate with others when you're not compassionate with yourself, you can. But when you're compassionate with yourself and when you're healing with yourself, it encourages a behavior, can create calm with the people around you. and allows you to engage in what we might call ethical practices that are beyond Buddhism, which is to be a little bit more aware of your surroundings. We have a wiser understanding of where people are coming from. We're not leaning into hate as much as we're leaning into compassion. We're speaking from a more heartful place, and so many other things that are included called in the Eightfold Path. But through a self-compassion and mindfulness, through these practices, as we heal others. And I know that that sounds a little simple. It is really that simple. And there's a lot of work behind it. And one of the things that came up, I remember in 2020, when we talk a little bit about what does it mean to be patient? And for me, that meant at that time, it means we shift from the people who are not ready and focus on the people who are ready to heal. So focus on the parts of you that are ready to heal. Self-compassion part or the mindfulness practice, so many ways to practice: walking, sitting, lying down, dancing, singing, running. That's the other thing I wanted to bring in. It's not just about sitting in silence or even walking in silence. One of you had mentioned, just right now, I check my toes. Just being able, Xander, you'd called being grounded.
Yeah. The thing about self-compassion that I particularly like is that if I find myself having thoughts about some other person or a group of people, them, and they're all these things that they're doing that I don't like, and how I wish they would just stop it and do things how I want them to do them, you know, part of what I can do in a reflection mode is to think about, okay, do I ever do things that people don't like? Do I ever do things that I don't like? That's what I love about the metta practice, the loving kindness practice, is that you extend from yourself out and out and out and out, so that at a certain point you're able to bring into your metta practice, quote unquote, enemies, people that are not supposed to be lovable, reachable, likable. I had a first clue into this when I was 14 years old. I was in a group home for delinquent girls. And there was another girl in the program that I did not like. And I said to one of my friends, I really don't like so-and-so. And she said, why don't you like her? And I said, because she's so sarcastic. And then they looked at me with this look on their face. And I was like, what? And they were like, you're the most sarcastic person we know. It's that mirror. And I think that's one of the things that a self-compassion practice can help us with, is it doesn't mean we excuse what people are doing that is harmful or illegal or whatever it is, right? We're not excusing it, but it gives me a certain, I don't know, it's like a mental walk in the shoes, so to speak, so that I can at least release the animosity or the rage or the hatred, so that I don't get stuck in that. I can be like, okay, I might do this for this reason. Why are they doing it? It gives me curiosity. And then with curiosity, I can actually approach those people. And I can say, I'd like to know more about how you came to think this way or believe this way. And then usually what ends up happening is they're completely different than I thought they were. And we have then some sort of a connection. We're not going to be BFFs or anything, probably. It breaks down all of those barriers. It can. It can break down all those barriers. Sometimes people are just awful.
You're reminding me of course, what I call my Bible of the Four Agreements, just about the assumptions. And I have this belief that the ways that we show up reflect our levels of healing. And so me growing up sarcastic, me maybe growing up, I was totally hyper, or of the way that I drank when I was younger, those were reflections of the healing that I wasn't doing. And when someone is suffering, so like this person who is in front of me, I'm aware, because of my self-compassion practice, my mindfulness work, and I need to mention Al-Anon was a really good help for me. I can look at anybody who's causing harm and understand that they are suffering. And like you said, Xander, it doesn't make it okay, but it does allow me a little bit of spaciousness to know from where I want to react or how I want to respond when I have the space of compassion. I might not get to forgiveness at any point, and that's okay too. But as long as you, like you were saying, as long as I point over there and say, they've got a problem, they're doing something wrong, blah, 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 there's nothing wise about that. There's nothing wise about that reaction. It's not going to fix anything. It's great to have the awareness at first, and then how do I want to respond from that? There was something else you said too, but I'm having one of those mornings.
We have neurotransmitters in our brain. We have them in our solar plexus, our gut. When I mention neurotransmitters, what I think is so important is that we all communicate with one another. And sometimes when we're out of touch, these neurotransmitters may be knocking on our door saying, hey, pay attention to me. And it may come through as maybe a stomach ache or a headache or feeling tense. Obviously, it speaks through us, but if we're not paying attention, we're not aware that we are having this communication taking place. And that old expression, the hairs went up on my spine, is one of those moments where the communication took effect. Wake up, pay attention, be present, protect yourself, or it was a gut feeling. And so I reached out, took the leap of faith, and approach this person to see if they needed help. It's one of those moments when we are in touch with ourselves and what our body is signaling, but also the fact that our cells have memory. And I always tell my grandchildren, we're loaded with lots of memory banks, believe it or not. And it's all memory. And going back and being able to retrieve that is an autonomous process. We don't even realize it. We can connect with that to help us be more present.
I was listening to Dr. Michael Beckwith this morning, one of the many spiritual leaders that I listen to, talking about, I love that you mentioned this bank, and we have this memory bank that gets in our bodies, and then even approaching that or working with that through a lens of self-compassion so that we don't get caught in a mind loop that continues to play out like it's all happening now. So obviously you get to work with somebody like Xander, who's a therapist, on how do we recognize it, recognize how it might be impacting us for the sake of healing, but also soothing it so that we can be present in the now. And I think that what's interesting is we're not conditioned for any of that. We're not conditioned to love ourselves. We're not conditioned to be aware of ourselves. And the other thing that you brought up for me is empathy. Some of this is also about having empathy for ourselves, what's going on inside, and then noticing when our empathy for others might be pulling us out. So that's also part of practicing self-compassion. You may have heard people say, I feel everything. There's a word they use besides empathetic. We all do feel everything, and some of us have different levels of it. And the compassionate thing for yourself is how do you create boundaries around what you do once you feel it?
You might be referring to empathic.
Thank you. Right. People who are empathic.
Yeah. Well, that would be me. When I was younger, I didn't know how to, quote unquote, control it. It's this sense of, if I go into a room, I can feel the energy of the room. When I'm around people, I can feel their energy, and I'm highly attuned to that. I mean, it turns out that in my case, I think it was just a coping mechanism for growing up in around a lot of abuse. Mm-hmm. And when you grow up around a lot of abuse, you learn how to pay attention to the micro gestures and the micro expressions on people's face and the subtle changes in energy so that you can get to a safe place. Once I made this pivot from that was a coping mechanism, and I don't really need that anymore, now it's actually getting in my way of being in relationship with people because I was constantly checking in with them. How are you doing? Are you okay? What's going on? Are you angry with me? Every little shift in their energy, people don't like being read that closely. So I then had to learn how to shift to not doing that, but also I have to pay attention to my own limbic system in my brain that's sending me alerts. So I want to have that balance between knowing the difference between I'm in true danger and my danger signal is just being sparked by something that's not a danger. And for me, what helped me do that was, again, somebody gave me a book of the mid-1980s that had sun salutations in it, which is this really wonderful exercise that you can do, a whole system of exercises.
Yoga practice.
Yeah, yoga practice. But what was also in the book were these really wonderful remindings. to pay attention to your own body's needs and impulses. So for example, when you feel thirsty, drink something. When you feel hungry, eat something. When you feel tired, sleep. When you need to go to the bathroom, go to the bathroom. Because what we end up doing parts of our lives is we override all of these signals from the body because we don't have time, not in the right place. And so if we override and override and override, we lose touch from our own body signals. And if we're out of touch with our own body signals, how are we going to be able to, one, be in touch with other people's needs and wants to a degree, not like you said, in that codependent way? Again, we've got self-compassion, we've got self-care, and I would add to that maybe like self-attunement and pay attention to, because On was saying, when you got these neurotransmitters, they're sending us signals. But if we just go, oh, I have a stomach ache, or I have a headache, or my back hurts, and we just leave it at that, like it could be a symptom of something else.
We are taking our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour. Our guest this hour is Lev White. Lev teaches and writes about unconditional love and self-compassion. You can learn more about Lev at affirmativeacts.org. Stay tuned, we'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. Our guest this hour is Lev White, who is a love and compassion activist. Lev teaches and writes about how unconditional love and self-compassion are the ultimate gateways to honoring and understanding others. Let's pick up where we left off.
And it doesn't mean we have to run off to the allopathic doctor, but it does mean that it could be beneficial to check in with the self, with the body, with the mind. You must run into this, Lev, in your work, that specifically in the trans community, asking people to get in touch with their body, to be in their body, there is a certain level of resistance to that, or because of just not wanting to do it, not understanding how to do it, but also In some cases, I didn't have this with my transition and my transness, this desire to dislocate from my body. There are people in our community who do have, in addition to gender dysphoria, they have a body dysmorphia.
Yes. Yeah, Xander, that was such a beautiful share. There was so much in there. And I want to acknowledge your suffering as a child. You mentioned it earlier, and I didn't say anything. I just want to acknowledge that now. And obviously, and maybe that's not the right thing to say, but of course it's going to impact how you show up in the world. And what you said about finding a safe space might just be in your body or in the room, right? And just want to touch on how many of us are conditioned from early on not to trust. So we're born with these senses. We can tell, I mean, we can walk in a room and see when everybody's happy and see when everybody's sad. Like, that's like a general thing most of us can sense. And then it's go kiss your uncle, go sit on your aunt's lap, go do this, go do that, when you're saying no. So we're conditioned to not notice. We have to go to the bathroom when they say so, when it's in school. So there's all these ways that we're trained to disengage from our own judgment, from our own senses of what needs to happen next. And then, yes, and I'll shift. I have had trans people aggressively talk about, during, for example, a body scan, not to talk about the pelvis area and not saying groin, but just don't even go near the pelvis. And for whatever challenges that they may have with their body, which I also have not had, but I have certainly empathy and compassion. Generally speaking, right now, having states in a whole different way, because when we were younger, somehow we managed to get the services that we needed, and it was a challenge, but you didn't have the whole state looking at you. You didn't have the whole country knowing your case. And so for youth today, we go back to this, it may be challenging, this may be hard. How can I be kind to myself? How can I take care of myself now? What do I need right now? Which also we get pulled away from because people are telling you what you need and when you need to do it and how. Sometimes that's a great thing. On mom's pencil and quiet, that's a great thing. And also it sets us up for abuse in many ways. Because I want to say trans folks and people labeled female at birth, the whole idea that you have a sexuality will have you shamed and stoned even till this day if you're 12, 13, and 14 while your brother's being told to explore their sexuality. Even on the male side, there's this aggressive way that men can be taught to be and how their bodies should be so that we're all figuring it out. Yay, mindfulness. Yay, people who offer mindfulness. Yay, mindfulness communities. Yay, and out of the mindfulness, self-compassion, compassion for ourselves now. And I wasn't explicit, but I say we're okay. It's me and my younger me, because younger me's might get nervous when people are screaming. So we're okay taking care of all of us, all of our bodies.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Lots of topics there.
I know. Well, I want you to talk about your consulting business, Affirmative Acts. What are you doing? What kind of clients do you have?
I want to say I took the name from a book by June Jordan, and I talked to her last partner and said, how do you think June would feel about me using this title for my business, and got a blessing there. I do have clients and I have mentees. So I have the privilege to be able to walk into many different communities, whether it's corporate, Airbnb, or Bear Corporation, big ones, and or smaller organizations like See the Girl or the San Francisco Library System, and spiritual centers, such as I'll be doing some work with a local synagogue, and I've done work with other Jewish and Christian communities in the Bay Area. I have a workshop that I've been doing since 2002 on anti-bullying, allyship training people to work with and support their trans and gender nonconforming community within their teams and institutions, something called dismantling microaggressions. I call that meeting the moment. So dismantling microaggressions, helping people see their unconscious bias and explaining that how normal it is, and then doing the work of sharing tools with how to dismantle them, which goes back again to awareness. What am I thinking? Where did I learn these things from? And then how can I be kind to myself so I can shift? And I mentioned earlier, I've been doing a compassion in the workplace. And I started that. My first program was with Sony Entertainment. And that, of course, comes straight out of my Buddhist practice and my work with the Center for Mindful Self-Compassion. So I went through their teacher training program. I have got retreats coming up. There's a one trans retreat at Big Bear Retreat Center in California, and that's in June. And then Transmission is a trans masculine and gender nonconforming in August. And it was a BIPOC retreat happening in California. And I'm terrible about putting stuff up on my website, but if you go to LinkedIn, I try to update people on that. And then last and certainly not least, I have the honor of doing spiritual mentorship or counseling with folks. And that's included friars and Buddhist practitioners and some Jewish friends and not so much Christians, but just helping people come back to what they love and what helps them and grows them.
And you're involved in a chaplaincy program too, right? Through Sojourn?
Yeah. So that program, we do training inside religious institutions. I was able to help build that, but I haven't done any trainings for them as of yet. But yeah, I'm still involved.
Well, I just appreciate that you're in that world. I'm a seminary graduate, but I haven't done a lot of work in that world. I graduated from PSR, which is the same school that the Sojourn Chaplaincy director graduated from.
And so,
it's been part of my life and my world. I mean, I met my wife, Margaret, while we were students at PSR. So 22 years ago now. So yeah, it's a very special place in my heart. And I haven't done a lot of work in those spaces, religious or spiritual spaces, but I bring that into the work that I do.
Yes, I do. That's what I was going to ask you. Do you find that it shows up because it's inside you? It can't not. Yeah.
Well, and clinically speaking, a lot of people have negative experiences growing up in homes or in religious systems where religion was something that was used more as a weapon than as something that was for communion.
Right.
So that it's part of what a lot of times people are working through.
Right. Yeah. Do I have a last word?
Well, I was just going to say it was wonderful to have you on the show, and I've loved our conversation.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you and Ann for having me on, and then just sharing again with there's a lot going on in the world. Please be kind to you. Please connect to the people who are also kind to you. Prioritize them. Thank you both so much.
Thanks, Lev. Absolutely. It was great seeing you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for your stories.
You have been listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. Ann and Xander Kagg. Our guest this hour was Fresh Lev White. You can learn more about Lev at affirmativeacts.org. Thank you for listening.